From Springfield, this is State Week in Review, a program of analysis and commentary on the events that made news this past week in Illinois state government and politics.
Point is, having a special election, unfortunately we're reminded of this because of the tragic death of Judy Buckley, but having a special election is a good idea. It's a good public policy not to have somebody appoint somebody for over 4 years, arguably.
I have a question for you. If Governor Quinn was reelected and the comptroller, Democrat nominee for comptroller, was elected and passed away, would we be here today taking up this measure?
I would hope so. I would certainly hope so.
I think that's a simple yes or no. Could you please give me the luxury of answering one way or the other?
Yes.
Wow. That's a whopper. Holy cow.
All right. This bill is legally deficient for a number of reasons, both from, in my perspective, a constitutional basis and a parliamentary procedure basis. So let's call the bill what it is. It is a brazen, partisan, politically motivated power play, period.
And I think it's important that we understand that voluntarily limiting your contributions is part of understanding that we live in a society and a democracy of one person, one vote, not $1, one vote. We cannot allow a flood of powerful money to take over our democracy. It still is government of the people, everybody, even those of limited means. And I think all of my petition-passing friends would be disappointed if I didn't say it's time to make the will of the people the law of the land. Thank you very much.
At the end there, Governor Pat Quinn, as he heads into his final weekend of service as governor of Illinois, and before that, the political gnashing of teeth over the important issue of the day. Should we elect a state comptroller or appoint one for 4 years? And we'll talk about that and other issues ahead on State Week. I'm Bill Wheelhouse. Joining us, Charlie Wheeler, director of the Public Affairs Reporting Program at the University of Illinois Springfield. Amanda Venicky, State House Bureau Chief for WUIS and Illinois Public Radio. Brian Mackey, reporter for WUIS and Illinois Issues. And our guest this week, Doug Finke of Gatehouse Media, which includes the State Journal Register in Springfield, the Peoria Journal Star, and papers in Galesburg and Macomb, among others. Doug, welcome to the show.
Glad to be here.
And so we had a lot of political gnashing of teeth over the state comptroller. We'll get to that in just a second. It obviously came because Judy Bartopinka passed away a while back. Governor-elect Rauner did announce his intention to appoint a former legislative candidate as the comptroller when he takes office next week, Amanda Venicky.
Yes, he did. So Leslie Munker was in a really nasty race with Democratic Representative Carol Senti of Carol Stream. And Senti did come out on top. It's one of those potential swing districts where Democrats have begun to make inroads where Republicans had once been the mainstay. And there were some really gross campaign brochures. Leslie Munker says that that was more on the House Democrats and Senti's side than hers. She also is a business executive. And that's probably perhaps where some of the connection comes from. At least that's the conjecture. She'd received a lot of money from Ron Gidwitz and worked for Helene Curtis and one of Gidwitz's former companies. It was basically a surprise, this choice by Rauner to appoint this, again, failed candidate and executive as his comptroller pick. There'd been talk about, you know, would it be treasurer candidate Tom Cross, who narrowly escaped a win against Mike Frericks in November? Would it be another top Republican? But generally, the feedback so far seems to be all right. We haven't really heard a lot from Munger, but she does say that she's okay with a special election and that she does, at least at this point, hasn't even started the job yet, would be a candidate for it in next year.
And I guess narrowly escaping a win is like snatching defeat from the jaws of victory or something like that.
Given the state of Illinois right now, that probably is a good thing.
Well, one question comes to mind. In his gubernatorial campaign, he was going to shake up Springfield, and he talked about being a political outsider. And I realize the public's not really going to pay a lot of attention to who holds the constitutional office of comptroller in most cases. But this seems like it's just inside politics when you hire what some would say is a failed legislative candidate.
I'm not sure I would agree with that, because she is someone who has no prior public service on her record. She's done a lot of volunteer work in her area with an agency that helps people with disabilities. She was a very successful businesswoman, and according to interviews she's given, she said that she stepped down from her business position so that she could spend more time raising her family. So she's not a political insider in the sense that here's somebody who's been in the state house for 20 years and got beat for re-election and is looking for something to do. So I think that, in my mind, that fits the image of what I would have of an outsider. You don't want somebody who is, we brought in somebody from the Republic of Panama who doesn't really speak English, but they'll be a great comptroller because they have no ties or no knowledge about Illinois.
So fortunately, we don't have Comptroller Noriega then, I guess, is what you're saying. The comptroller leads into what was a special legislative session this week, because the Illinois General Assembly, or the Democrats, decided this appointment of Leslie Munger should be a two-year appointment, not for the full-year term, Doug Finke.
Well, I mean, they set it up as a policy issue that a statewide official should not be an appointee who serves for 4 years, that the voters ought to have a chance to weigh in at some point and not have to endure an appointed person to that post for 4 years. Republicans probably rightly point out that the way this is set up, the election will occur in 2016, which is a presidential election year. Democrats tend to turn out in greater numbers during presidential years, so that would give an edge up on any Democratic candidate running for comptroller at that time. So you've got the so-called good government argument on one side and the raw political argument going on the other side.
And Republicans buttressed that with more than just politics, though. I mean, that was the heart of it. And as you heard at the top of the show from Representative David Harris and from Leader Durkin there, when he said, all right, would we be in this same place if Pat Quinn had won election? He was the one that got to make the appointment. But they also said, and I did have to say I found some irony here, that Democrats are talking about, you know, democracy, 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 and they bend the rules of the General Assembly often, but this was a measure that got through both houses of the General Assembly really in a matter of hours. That's not supposed to be how a bill becomes a law. And they also said that if you look back, there are some arguments back and forth when it comes to the constitutionality. So there are separate articles of the Constitution, one that gives the legislature the ability to pass this special election, but then Republicans say no constitutional officer is supposed to be a full four-year term. And further, you look back to when the 1970 Constitution was written, according to Barbara Flynn Curry, that heralds back to the 1870 version. And what had been talked about there and since was that you don't want to have statewide candidates in presidential election years because voters are apt to be or are likely to be more focused on what's going on nationally, and that would distract from important issues of a statewide nature.
We often hear talk whenever we're talking about the Office of Comptroller and talking about the Office of Treasurer, even from people that are successful candidates in it. Yes, we need to merge it. It never quite happens legislatively to get a constitutional amendment question of merging those two offices, but we will be hearing talk about that again, Charlie Wheeler.
Yeah, and as a matter of fact, at one point, and Doug, you can correct me if I'm wrong, the House passed a version that would merge the two offices and call it the Office of the Comptroller. The House was in Democratic hands, and there was a Democratic comptroller. The Senate passed a version that would merge the two offices and call it the Office of the Treasurer. The Republicans had a Senate majority, and there was a Republican treasurer. And some wag suggested, well, maybe we should call it the Treasury of the Comptroller or the Comptrollership of the Treasurer or something like that to split the difference. But in this day and age, it probably does make sense to merge the two offices. Basically, the comptroller's job is to write the checks. The treasurer's job is to keep track of the money, make sure there's enough in the bank to cover the checks that get written every night. And so the offices coordinate and work very closely together, as is. And even when they've been held by people of different parties, there's never been a problem where the treasurer and the comptroller haven't been able to work together.
It's kind of baffling to me even why we elect this office. This is the sort—I mean, this is essentially a ministerial job, largely. I mean, there are a handful of responsibilities that each officer has, but basically, you know, you're signing the checks. You're not making policy. So the candidates talk about, I'm going to bring fiscal discipline to Illinois government and this, that, and the other thing, but they don't really actually have much of a say in passing the budget any more than any other citizen. You know, I mean, I guess they have a somewhat more access to politicians, you would assume. They have offices in the Capitol, but they can't really change the way Illinois
spends its money. It's doling out internships.
It's deciding
when to give out money and in what order, basically.
Yeah, that's probably the biggest decision point they have. But you look at it, and historically in Illinois, the value of a particular elected position has been judged in terms of basically patronage-type things. How many jobs does it control? How many contracts can it give out? Or it's seen as a stepping stone to higher office. The comptroller fits neither of those categories. The comptroller's budget is roughly $110 million this year, but $85 million of it is money that gets passed on to pay court reporters' salaries, to pay the salaries of all the other statewide elected officials, top agency directors. So the agency itself has a very small budget, of which only about $5 million is for contracts. It's only got 230 people. And as far as a stepping stone, I actually went back and refreshed my memory about the people who have held that office before Judy Bar Topinka. All of them ran for something else, and they all got beat. So it hasn't been much of a stepping stone.
It's a perceived stepping stone, but it's a slippery stepping stone.
Yeah. The exception would be Roland Burris, who ran for Attorney General and got elected. But he also lost for the U.S. Senate, for the governorship, for the mayor of Chicago. He finally wound up a U.S. senator when he was probably the only guy in Illinois who would accept the appointment to fill the seat Barack Obama vacated from Rod Blagojevich.
You know, all this talk about the merger and the untimely passing of Judy Bar Topinka raised it, Rauner himself, in a statement calling the special election measure constitutionally dubious, raised again the notion of merging the offices of treasurer and comptroller, calling it Judy's amendment to the Constitution. I think what this entire episode shows, though, and how hard Democrats and Republicans both fought for it, shows how much that isn't going to happen. First of all, you have House Speaker Michael Madigan, who has said no to it. He's against it. His Majority Leader Barbara Flynn Curry said no, that's a separate issue, even though she'd be for it. She really kind of just dismissed it and brushed it aside. So much as we've heard more about that now, I imagine that that will fade quickly. Clearly, the parties, for as much as we have just spent this time talking about, you know, what's the point of having an election to this office and making it political, they clearly think that it is and will do all they can to hold on to that.
Yeah, I mean, there's still that perception that it's a springboard. I also wanted to come back to the argument we heard a lot that this is direct democracy, right? We need to give the voters a say. And I just want to point out that the voters did have a say on the minimum wage and the millionaire's tax, and other people wanted to give the voters a say on term limits, and the courts ruled that wasn't a good idea. But I mean, this is yet another example where, you know, when it suits them, they say they want to hear from the voters and they want to give the voters a say. And when they don't really want to do what the voters are telling them to do, then we're just going to ignore that. So,
well, I would draw a distinction, though, between advisory referenda on public policy issues and the notion of electing someone to fill a particular office. I think there is a distinction there.
Although this is something that they could have passed into law any time in the past 34 years since the Constitution took effect.
Yeah. Sure. And as a matter of fact, it's in a sense, it's an oversight. Like so much in Illinois, we don't act on it until there's an emergency.
Pensions, tax policy, sure, right.
Yeah. Well, and the Constitution, when it was adopted or ratified by the voters, there were a number of provisions, probably more than a dozen, where the framers of the Constitution laid out kind of a skeletal outline of what state government should be, and then it was up to the legislature to fill them in. There's a lot of places where it says, as provided by law. dealing with vacancies in the constitutional elected officers. That's one of the areas where the legislature says the governor appoints, but it also says as provided by law. So the notion that the General Assembly decides finally in an emergency with the untimely passing of Judy Bartapinka that, yeah, we really ought to spell out how long of a period of time does this appointee serve, and it probably should only be until the next election, which is what this does. And it doesn't apply just to the comptroller. This law also, or this soon-to-be law, provides the same qualifications or the same procedure if there's a vacancy in the office of the Attorney General or the Secretary of State or the Treasurer.
And I just continue to wonder, now that that'll be a statewide election coming up, there'll be a lot of ads for president, for Congress in that election. Are we going to see more spending and more advertising for a state comptroller's race than we ever have?
We probably will. I mean, the trend is definitely up for everything.
You're listening to State Week in Review. Just ahead, we talk about the Lincoln Presidential Library and Museum and who should govern it.
Support for State Week in Review comes from Illinois Issues Magazine, deciphering Springfield legislation and the state of the state. Information at illinoisissues.uis.edu.
Our panel on State Week, Charlie Wheeler, Amanda Venicky, Brian Mackey, and Gatehouse Media's Doug Finke. I'm Bill Wheelhouse. Doug Finke, in the past week, a report came out after a study of the Lincoln Presidential Library and Museum. There had been a lot of disagreements over the operations of that museum, a threat of legislation or a threat of breaking apart the museum away from the State Historical Preservation Agency. Can you tell us about this recommendation and what its findings are, and if there's any meaning to that?
Let me back up just for a second.
Sure.
There's been a lot of friction between the boards and the individuals who operate the Abraham Lincoln Presidential Library and Museum and the State Historic Preservation Agency, which is actually over the Library and Museum. And there are people on the board that oversees the Library and Museum who think that basically they're getting short shrift from historic preservation, and the Library and Museum are kind of languishing, that they aren't able to fill jobs. There's a whole host of complaints that they have. That kind of came to a head last spring when House Speaker Madigan introduced a bill to make the Library and Museum a separate state agency apart from historic preservation. The bill passed the House. It did not pass the Senate. After the legislature adjourned, a decision was made to form a study committee to look at ways to improve the relationship between historic preservation and the Library and Museum. That committee met for the last several months. They issued their report last week. Basically, they cast a dim eye on the idea of making it a separate state agency. They said that the result would probably drain resources from both historic preservation and the Library and Museum. They recommended basically restructuring this unwieldy board system where the Library and Museum has a board, historic preservation has a board. Nobody's really sure who reports to what. The study said, let's clean that up. We'll have a single board. We'll expand it to include some other members or some people, such as representatives of the General Assembly, have them sitting on there. So there's some direct input from the legislature. Where this is going to go is a good question. There's going to be additional hearings, according to the chairman of a House committee, to discuss the report and see where they go from here. I spoke with Speaker Madigan's spokesman after this came out. He said two things. One, the speaker intends to continue pursuing some resolution on this issue during this upcoming spring session. But he also said that The report basically concluded that there are problems there and there needs to be some action taken, but that he didn't necessarily think that just revamping a board was the kind of decisive action that needs to be taken. So maybe that's a signal that the speaker doesn't agree with the findings here and may continue to pursue making the library and museum a separate state agency.
Yeah, I just I am still somewhat baffled at the speaker's personal involvement in this issue. I think we were all pretty surprised last spring when he decided to, you know, to make this one of his big last things he wanted to do in the May session, and you had reporters looking into the his district office was leased from somebody. I can't even remember all the ties that were with somebody who was on the board or something like that. And it just seems like an odd issue for him to insert himself into. I mean, obviously the ALPLM is very important to historic preservation. It's kind of their big moneymaker, their highest profile asset. So you can understand from their standpoint why they wouldn't want to lose it. It's important to Springfield and the museum. You know, coming from the university standpoint, we, you know, here at the University of Illinois Springfield, where WUIS is based, we have to deal with a lot of state laws and bureaucracy and stuff that can be very difficult to navigate for hiring and things like that. And we heard some of the same frustrations expressed by the museum's directors about, you know, filling positions and things like that. But I'm with Doug. I'm still a little baffled about where this ends up ultimately.
We'll be watching that. If the speaker says he'll still be involved, it will probably be an attention getter. We heard this week Governor Pat Quinn made kind of what was his last big speech as governor at the City Club of Chicago. And Amanda Winicky, he says he will still be a petition passer in the future.
He does. You know, I was unable to attend the speech, but from what I heard of it, and it was pretty classic Quinn. He hit all of the same notes that we have heard from him really throughout his career. He talked about his helping to organize CUB, that's the Citizens Utility Board. He spoke about petition passing. He touched on veterans, all of his main causes. And he said that to him, being governor means being governor to all of Illinois. Part of that just might be classic Quinn. It also seemed as if it was either some digs or some warnings, maybe some leftover feelings from the campaign trail against Bruce Rauner. He talked about how he had passed and signed into law Illinois' first ever limits on campaign contributions and lived under those for 3 years, he said voluntarily, and warned of basically Illinois government being bought off and how it needs to remain one person, one vote, not $1, one vote. So to me, it seemed like those were arrows that were aiming right at his successor.
You're right, Amanda. It was classic Quinn. And even that one thing you mentioned right there, one person, one vote, that's classic Quinn in a different way, because that's a line he used in the speech. I think we heard it at the top of the show in the audio there. It's also something he said to the Chicago Tribune when he had an interview with them. And so, yet again, this is Quinn still kind of beating the same talking points he's used again and again. I don't feel like, even though he's sort of doing his legacy tour, I guess you can't call it a victory lap, really, but his legacy lap, if you will, you know, talking about how the economy is coming back and that sort of thing, as he's trying to cement, you know, what people will think of him in the future, he is still not showing a lot of introspection or mm-hmm. you know, acknowledging any of his, you know, that his missteps might have led to his political defeat or anything like that.
No regrets, I believe, is what he had said. And, you know, I had put in for an exit interview. I'm assuming many reporters have. I actually have had, you know, an outstanding request to speak with the governor one-on-one for several years now, which he has not granted. I think it's kind of the two opposing sides of Pat Quinn. He's the populist who really, you know, says that he's been on the ground. In his City Club speech, he talked about these are programs that didn't come from the top down, that they started at the grassroots. And yet he also has very much kind of cordoned himself off as governor, kept those who he has close ties with very close to him, and he doesn't, you know, branch outside of that. And further is he's worried about his legacy, and we're, you know, kind of continuing to see that. There's talk that that's part of where there has been hesitation with medical marijuana being rolled out. Is that good or bad for his legacy? He very much cares, it seems, what other people think of him, and yet he's gone forward, and one of his last acts as governor was to, you know, get his campaign manager appointed in this high-paying job for which he doesn't appear to have any of the necessary experience. So it's the two sides of Pat Quinn, and it's really hard to nail down what exactly he's getting that, other than that he cares about veterans, and really a lot of that comes from his father. In his city club speech, he did apparently, you know, tear up and was very heartfelt in talking about his dad. And that was also a similar passage that he had given right when he was first inaugurated on the heels of Rod Blagojevich.
And now we'll get in some notes from the field, and we'll start with Brian Mackey.
Yeah, I just want to note that this week it was actually last week, but we learned about it this week, the death of a political scientist named Phil Converse. He was responsible for a landmark paper in 1964, The Nature of Belief Systems in Mass Publics, basically concluded based on surveys of voters from the 50s that the vast majority of the public lack any well-formed belief system and do not have an ability to think abstractly, and instead was just really motivated by party and major events like war and recession. It really changed the way we understand voters. People have grown somewhat more sophisticated with the level of increased education and TV advertising, but it is still one of the most influential and important works of social science research ever.
Charlie Wheeler.
Well, the Institute of Government and Public Affairs came out with their flash index, and it shows that Illinois' economy is still growing slowly but steadily. The December number was down to 106.5 from 106.6 in November, but anything above 100 shows growth. And it's been slow and steady all year long, within a range of a few percentage fractions of a tenth of a point in the 106 to 107 range throughout 2014.
And Doug Finke?
Just a reminder that we're going to start a new era in Illinois government this coming week with the swearing in of Republican Bruce Rauner on Monday. It'll be interesting to see what he says in his inaugural comments. And then 2 days later, we swear in the state legislature, which will remain firmly in Democratic hands.
And Amanda Vinicky, the final minute is yours.
Well, Bruce Rauner, as we begin to cover his inauguration, we'll see how that goes, not just what he says, but also how open he is to the press. This is some new ground here, and he'll be set to roll out who his choices for some cabinets and state positions. Further, he said that one of his main goals was to meet with every member of the General Assembly. Not sure if he's exactly met that target, but he has made some headway. I did a story on that this week and talked to a whole lot of legislatures. And surprisingly, or maybe not given the nature of Illinois politics, a lot of Democrats are actually pretty enthusiastic and excited about them. It seems as if they've been starving for attention from the executive branch and are finally getting it.
They're always starving for attention.
They may regret that soon enough, I'm guessing. But
that's our time for this edition of State Week. Thanks to Doug Finke of Gatehouse Media. Always keep a watch out for his column, Statehouse Insider, on Sundays. You can get a podcast of this show by going to WUIS.org. You can also try to search it out on iTunes or iTunes U. It's State Week in Review. Production assistance for our program today provided by Bob Meyer. I'm Bill Wheelhouse.
You've been listening to State Week in Review, a program of commentary and analysis of events in Illinois state politics and government. State Week in Review is produced in the state capitol by public radio station WUIS. This is IPR, Illinois Public Radio.